to Big Brother listening in there. Okay. Yes, this, and so this session is called Training for Transformation, and it's about methodologies that one can use in education, in an education that's non-formal. My name is Maria Hamlin Zuniga. I was born in Minnesota, like a lot of people here in Holden Village, but I have lived for the last 25 years in Central America, basically in Nicaragua and in Guatemala. And what I want to do is share some of that experience with you people today and help you learn about it doing it. Okay? Does that sound all right? Let's shut the door. Unfortunately, I'm in competition with Jonathan. I'd rather not be. Well, when we talk about popular education, those of us who work basically in Latin America mean popular education is really grassroots education. And when we talk about popular, we're talking about the priority population that we work with, which is usually rural, because many of our Latin American communities are rural, but also the urban poor. And we talk about working with marginal people, but it turns out the marginal people that we're working with really are the vast majority of the population, because the poor are about, in some countries, 90-95% of the population of Latin American countries. And what it is, it's an education that's an alternative, that's consistent with our struggles for social justice. Some people talk about popular education as liberating education, or education for liberation. Paulo Freire is a Brazilian that in the 60s, because of liberation theology, basically, worked to develop a new way of working with illiterate people, helping people become literate by identifying code words. And these code words came out of the experience of people. So if he was working with people in a poor urban neighborhood, one of the words would be favela, which means poor urban neighborhood or slum. No? And favela has vowels in it, A-A-A. And people would learn that word, would talk about what that word meant to them, and then would build other words on that word. No? And we call this kind of education liberating education because it helps people reflect upon their situation. Reflection that leads to action that leads to more reflection. And actually, this becomes a circle. Instead of seeing it this way, you can see it this way. No? Now, there's some important characteristics of this kind of education. We're going to run through them. The starting point is the concrete experience of the learner. So the people who live in the favela, in the poorer of a neighborhood, begin learning from the basis of where they are, where they live, what their life is like there. They're not learning from a book, because most of the books that are produced have nothing to do with the reality of those people and their lives. And so using a book to learn to read and write their language would not be real for them. I don't know what books... Are any of you primary school teachers? Well, I don't know. When I went to school, eons ago, they had this book called Dick and Jane, you know? And probably there's something similar to Dick and Jane today, and maybe some of those Dick and Jane type books have experiences in them that are real for some of the students, but I wonder how many books are real for the majority of the students that are in school. How many of you have children in your classes that have a single parent? And how many books are about single parent families? Well, I know that Jenny's been looking for books that have different kinds of children in them, that they're not all white or they're not all middle class, and that she's found this hard to do. Well, that certainly is true when you're talking about adult education. So, we need to start in this kind of education, we start from the concrete experience of the learner. And there are no teachers. There are no teachers. I was talking earlier with Dave, and he was talking about education, and we need to be facilitators, not think of ourselves as educators, because I can learn as much from you as you can learn from me. We all have something very important from our concrete experiences that we can share with one another. For example, as a health worker, I work a lot with midwives. Now, I'm not a midwife, I'm a health educator. And if I'm going to work with midwives in a Guatemalan Indian community or in a rural community of Nicaragua, I have to know where that midwife is coming from, what her experiences are, what she really knows, and she knows a lot more than I know. We were talking earlier today about plants that some people called weeds on the Rosebud Reservation. Well, those weeds were medicinal plants. And I don't know the medicinal plants of all the peoples of the communities that I've worked with over the years, but I know enough to ask them to show me their plants and tell me what their plants are valuable for. So, recognizing that we're all teachers and we're all learners, that's part of popular education. And in this kind of education, there's a high degree of participation. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. There's a high degree of participation because if we're all learning from one another, it's really important that each one share. And especially for people who have been in a traditional form of education, it's hard for people to get involved in discussions. And I've noticed this a little bit here in Holden Village. There were some people that said to me, but when are you going to teach us something? No? Because I was having people work in groups and having the people talk about things. And I wasn't telling them what the answers are. I don't know what the answers are. I just know that there are lots of answers for each of you in this room about different things that you're concerned about. And you have to find those answers, and I can help to facilitate that. And that may mean working together in a group. Another important thing about popular education is that it leads to action for change. You know, we don't learn anything if we don't act upon it. We have to have a change in our attitudes, and then we have to act upon those changes in our attitudes. I can talk forever about what to do with dehydrated little babies, or Dolores can get up here every night and tell people what to do about dehydrated adults that go out hiking and don't take enough water with them. But if people hear that and don't act upon it, then we haven't had real education. Education comes when our attitudes change and we act upon those change. We act upon what we want. Popular education is a collective effort, a recognition that if we're going to solve our problems, and if we're talking about that poor urban neighborhood in Brazil or South Chicago or wherever, we need to realize that alone we're not going to make the change that we need to make. That we have to work together as a group, as a neighborhood, as a church guild, as a class in a classroom. That's how we're going to really find solutions to our problems. Popular education stresses the creation of new knowledge. In other words, I may have the book here that tells me all the things that a good midwife should know about hygiene, but I also need to put that together with what is the practical experience of this woman. And a lot of times, teachers don't do that. Teachers expect that what they have in the book is right, and this other stuff is folklore. No? And sometimes we see a lot of that. I had to teach a lot about nutrition over the years, and I came to a point at one time where I said, I can't teach about nutrition anymore, because I'm talking about what people should eat, and if people can't produce because they have no land, what am I doing talking about food? I've got to talk about land. And when you talk about land, that's a political issue, and people say, what are you talking about land and political issues in a nutrition class for? No? But how can I really get to the basics of nutrition if I don't talk about land? Well, some places that's dangerous business. But what we do is we're creating new knowledge and new understanding. The process is ongoing. It can happen anywhere, anytime, with any group of people of any age. We don't have to be little children to learn. You're all here because you thought maybe there was something interesting to learn. Maybe some of you thought you were going to work in clay, but in any case, we'll see that we don't need clay in the sculpture. And finally, it's fun. I think that this is what a lot of people object to. When we talk about popular education, they said, you know, education is a serious business. Why are you having so much fun? Why do you play games with adults? No? Why do you get adults relieving their tension by doing exercises in your classes? Well, because we think that learning should be fun. Learning shouldn't be a drudge. Is that a word? Well, whatever. It shouldn't be something that we don't like to do, and a lot of us don't like to do it. And why don't we like to go to school? Because they fill us full of things and they expect us to give it back in exams, and we get all tensed up about all these exams that we're going to have. And I'm sure that every single one of you in this room has been through lots of exams. How much of that stuff do you remember? How much of it do you use every day? Not too much. I think of how I used to cram for all those exams. I was a pre-med student, and I was in competition with all these fellows, because when I went to the University of Minnesota, only 7 women got accepted to medical school out of the 100 that were going to be accepted. And so there was all this competition. So what was I studying for? I was studying to pass the exams. And how much of that do I remember, or how much do I even need to know now? Not very much. No? The real education comes from our daily experiences. So that's the basis then for the kind of education that many of us are doing in Latin America. And a lot of these methodologies have been transferred to the first world, no? To use in developing countries, especially in work with social action. And what I wanted to do today was experiment together with you one of these particular methodologies, or techniques would be better to say, techniques for popular education. And that technique is called sculpturing. So I'm going to explain to you what sculpturing is. And we are, I think we can just use one group, okay? Now, in the sculpturing, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a theme. And one of you is going to be the volunteer first sculptor. And your raw material as a sculptor are the people who are in this room. This is your raw material. With this, the first sculptor will begin to build an idea. And then other people will come and will begin to build the idea and will explain what they're doing to the rest of you. And then as time goes on, another person will come in and build upon that idea and make it greater or do another idea. People who are in the sculpture can come out of the sculpture as well, but they have to have somebody come in and take their place. Got the idea? And what we will do is when consensus is reached about this sculpture, somebody will do a summary of that sculpture. And everybody will keep this in their mind, because actually we're going to do two sculptures this evening. Okay? So everybody will get a chance. Do I have a volunteer to begin? I'm going to give you a theme. Then I won't get any volunteers. Well, as you know, this is 1992. And we've been talking about this over the last few weeks. And so our first theme for this evening is discovery. Okay? Do I have a volunteer? Who wants to begin the sculpture? Who wants to create the first idea?
I will.
Okay.
Now, do I just take somebody and...
And you put them into positions. You have all of this raw material from which to choose.
All right. Let's see. Okay, now what do I do?
Now you explain your idea.
Oh, she's looking off and searching for something, and she's spotting something. She's not sure what yet.
Okay, now,
looking first.
Good. Would somebody else like to build upon this? Go ahead, just feel free.
Okay. Is so focused on this discovery that the person isn't recognizing the discovery behind, which in this case is people, which and I tried to show that how that feels to not be discovered or not be, that's the word.
Now, does somebody want to build upon this or change this? If you have an idea, you can get somebody to take
it. I know, I was just thinking, what can I think of?
Can I move these?
Oh, you may?
Move these.
These two are helping her discover and focus on it, but she wasn't sure what she was trying to discover, so she's asking her for some help.
Okay. Anybody else? You can add to this. You can change this.
Can it be apart from it, or just another variation or anything?
Just looking down.
Some wonderment. And this is about who am I discovering who I am.
Uh-huh. Anything else?
I'm going to let this person off the hook. I'm thinking as I'm going here, this is apart from this, a separate idea. After we're done, you can take your hand down because you see it already. And the sun goes down so you can be comfortable. She's pointing at the painting and she thinks she's discovered a chair.
I have one other observation because of the pointing aspects of everyone. I want this, yeah, both hands. And but your head has to be done just a little bit. And I want more of a surprise. Whoa, a chair! And you, I think we're going to do it with two hands clasped together, kind of like that. Maybe this downside doesn't look like a gun. And I think I would change you for having some celebration here with the hand up, and you also with the celebration of discovery there.
Now, I don't know who to ask, but are these two groups the same? Like, do they come together, or do they have anything to do with each other, or separate people?
Nobody knows that answer.
It's, for me, it was a collage, that they, it's not connected yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the next step for them to start discovering one another, and start turning around.
But somebody has to mold them, so if you're thinking about that, why don't you do it?
No, I'm getting tired of this pointy business. And then you, I don't know, what do you do when you see other people that you've never
seen? It's your problem, not mine.
Say hi.
Can I do one?
Yes, if you get somebody to take your place.
Okay, just come in a circle, everybody, and kind of get down in a circle like you're looking down there. You can come down. You can come down.
I think it's
just. Am I still looking at you? Sorry. You're all looking here in the ground at little bugs running around.
Oh, so you're taking it all over.
These are, I was thinking of kids, you know, discovering nature and animals running around. Ants watching them work.
Okay. Do you have some ideas?
I have an idea. You've discovered this thing. And all your hands are together on whatever is in there. Then you can put your hands on top of one another. Because there's kind of, y'all kind of want it now.
Whatever it may be.
I have you all sit back and hold hands.
Is it circus?
Circus. And hold hands. And the color of the circle we all discovered. And the same circle goes to their deathbed thinking they discovered a square. That's consistent.
That's good. Are there any other thoughts that anybody wants to add to this? Who would like then to give us a summary of what this process has been from the first to now?
Well, the first impression I got when the person was pointing, that was like a classic Columbus discovering a land that's been discovered for 15,000 years. And so then it seemed like the process started to discover things around him, and it wasn't just about discovering the land, there was people here. And then as it progressed, he started discovering other things in the land, and then the planning climates where people started to discover each other, that there was other people in the land, and there's other people, and that people were here. The humanness of it. And then the power of the circle is drawing everybody together.
Anybody else want to add something to that?
I'd add the different perspectives of how each person had a different way of shaping the sculptees. And one was a group not being discovered and discovering that they were not being discovered. And then another came up with another idea, and eventually it kind of came together. But there were about 6 or 7 different perspectives.
Okay. Now, everybody keep this process and our final image in your mind, okay? You can go back to your chairs. Now we're going to do a second one, okay? Resistance. It's all yours.
Here. And stand facing each other, and then put your hand in the center. And then I need 3 more pairs of 3 to do the same thing.
3 more pairs of 3.
Get everybody up.
This is the resistance of indigenous people being referred to as Indians in a collective whole. When Columbus landed in the East, there wasn't any Indians. There was no such thing as Indians. Mm-hmm. He created Indians. There were many nations and groups that spoke in many different languages with different beliefs. Mm-hmm. But we created them to be one unified thing. And the resistance that is happening is you remain individual groups. So I'll wipe out half of you here right now. More than that.
And then you have the same pair of women. So I switched her to kept these two of them. People that are already here, and she's one of the Europeans that came.
You should be resisting me.
Do you have an idea?
No, more reason.
Any other thoughts here?
I think resistance means to create barriers. So there's a barrier between those two people.
Are all these people from the same group?
No, they're a wall in the middle, something between them.
Are there barriers coming up within the groups in resistance?
I'm tired of resisting. Yeah, why don't we become partners?
No, but I'm just asking what, you know, how you're thinking of it.
Well, I think if there be resistance between those two people, then I think there'll be a barrier created.
Uh-huh. So, right. Between the people in her group or in his group?
These two.
A wall.
That's a wall.
Well, there's a resistance between these two objects. People, so there's a barrier created. I don't think there'd be resistance without a barrier.
What's creating the resistance? Is it these two people or is it the barrier that has nothing to do with these two people?
Well, someone needs to build on that.
Yeah, let's build on this idea. Yeah, get somebody to take your place.
Would you like to take my place?
I'm giving you a lot of help. Would you be so kind, as to Neil Bill? Do you have any back?
I hope not.
I mean, somebody else who does not have a back problem would be willing to let somebody else be on their shoulder. Would you? Okay. In fact, I'm going to need two more, so you can be over here. Is there another person who doesn't have a back problem who's going to allow somebody
to be on their back?
Or would you like to trade? That'd be great.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Okay.
You have to stay here.
I have a part to play.
You have a part.
Okay.
We need to get closer to the
wall. When they're all fixed, then we'll go back. Okay.
I need some light.
Light.
I know.
Wait, people. Light.
No. I'm fine.
You guys, she's in. This is a
thing. You know how to do this. Oh, you want to do it?
Yeah, I do.
Tripod.
Pyramid.
Be
sure you get the right.
Yeah, right.
It
doesn't matter. You do our slides, don't you? It doesn't matter.
Okay, they'll tell you. Okay.
Both knees and back.
That's back.
You want to. Weight in the lower arm.
Yeah. This is going to be a quick one, so get your eyes ready for it. And I'm going to be part of my thing. This is resistance.
You need to come close. So do you. Okay. Now put your hands together or toward each other, not touch us. Over us if you can. The two oppositions who are separated by the barrier have come together to converse. Resistance. You may get them.
Maybe stay close in the tripod thing so that somebody who wants to change this can.
We can go back up on this.
No, just stand in between them. There we are.
Those two are the barriers and we're still not.
No, we're a bridge.
A bridge.
This is the bridge between for those two to converse.
The two barriers.
You're still the feelings of animosity, of power that one side has and is trying to exert over the other side to keep them apart. You're the Columbus who is trying to conquer. And we are people who have become awake, perhaps on both sides, to help.
Well, these Indians
come together. These are Indians. You are our feelings. You are the wall of oppression.
Oh, I see. So we switched from people to walls. I got lost in the wall.
Okay, is there somebody else who wants to add to this idea?
I have an idea.
If you want, yes?
I have an idea.
Okay, can somebody take your place?
Well, I can actually step out because I don't need as many people that's here.
But you have to keep,
okay.
You can't do that.
That's not in the rules. Okay, and I want, okay, how am I going to do this? Okay. Okay, you two turn around and have your hands up, but don't touch to face each other, and you should stand there, and you should stand where I am. You stand where I am, and you stand on the other side. And then you put both hands up like they are. I guess you're all just going to line up like this, like these guys.
You all can stand.
Everybody gets to stand. Well, you can stay. That would be more interesting if you guys stayed on your knees and had your hands. They can be down. You can be comfortable. Don't make it. And just.
Don't touch.
Okay. Why don't I take these four here and come over here. Come right here.
First time I'm going to show that.
I'm adding a new dimension to this. And you should be down low also. Two down low, two up.
They're up.
And face them. And have your hands crossed towards them. And these are the people resisting each other. And this is nature resisting the people who are coming in.
Any more ideas? Or are you content? Okay, who can give us a summary of the process that we've just been through in resistance? Take us through the steps.
Somebody. I'm trying to show a sculpture where there were many different diverse groups in a continent, a couple continents, that were either taken apart and destroyed or meant to look unified so that there could be a common thing to point to overcome. And as the sculpture went on, it turned into more of an individual kind of thing, where individuals resisted individuals and individual groups, you know, resisted individual groups. And
okay, you can go back to your seats now. But don't forget the images. Now, what were the differences that you observed in these two processes?
What was your question, Sydney?
What are the differences between the first sculpture and the second sculpture? What differences did you observe?
In the discovery one, we could have, but we didn't have two groups. We were one group the whole time, discovering something else that wasn't portrayed in the sculpture. And in the resistance from the, actually after the first step, there was always the two.
Mm-hmm.
I thought people had a lot more fun with discovery than resistance.
They had more fun with discovery than resistance, uh-huh.
But more creativity with resistance.
More creativity with resistance. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
If there are more people involved with resistance in the discovery.
If there are more people involved.
More people, but less unity with resistance. Discovery.
More people, but less?
Unity.
Unity.
When the discovery started, you know, something in the distance, it was much more objective type of reality than the resistance. It was very flesh to flesh.
I think there was once in the discovery sculpture where a conflict of those who were being discovered and those who weren't, there was that push and pull. There was the resistance shown in one or two of the sculptures. In most of the sculptures, it was a very self-centered, I see it, I recognize it, it's there. The issues that were seen in the resistance sculptures were not brought out. It was not as developed as the resistance ones were.
In the discovery, there was a conclusion, there was something found, or it was the group that found each other, and the resistance, the way I saw it, it just kept going and going, and there was always something more to resist, and then that's when my nature thinking. even if I had put those people together, and some of them were bridging and were communicating and not resisting one another, there would be something else. And so it wasn't very simple. It just didn't conclude in my mind.
So. Any other comments?
I think both of them were very powerful. in the way he presented himself. Power of the circle, the unity of the circle, and then the image of how everything is shut down in resistance. How we close out, and the images I saw was go away, push back, or push against something. When the discovery is starting to unite, and both are very powerful.
I think the one represents something real, and the other one is imitation. The first.
Mm-hmm.
The first one will go into reality and become reality, and the second one will cease. You have any meaning? No. Mm-hmm. No, but you're praying.
I found it pretty hard to even image resistance, because I've been taught to discover my whole life. Go out and find that job, or go out and discover that new neighborhood, or go out and discover your friends. If you don't have any friends, it's because you're not outgoing, you're not going out to get them, and careers and... Whereas resistance has always been a negative. So how do you, it's kind of hard to image resistance.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I had to say the opposite when you wrote the words on the board before mm-hmm. people started. This resistance I had an immediate image in my head, and I didn't have anything to discover until we got the Columbus stance. So that's just
sorry, it's
just
a thing. Yeah, I had the positive image, like you had. I had, for discovery, I had the hope, for one word, hope, that you could reach out. And then I did have the negative connotation for resistance. That's hopelessness.
So for me, I had, in resistance, it's a very hopeful action. One which embraces the enemy, you know, which is why I tried to create that the bridge of communication. And discovery for me, it always has somebody who has power and somebody who doesn't have the power. And so I had the negative response to the thing discovery and then the positive to resistance.
I think of discovery is the word awe with discovery, and that means wonder but also fear. And that we played on the fear very much in this coach.
How did you feel about doing this?
Most
of you were involved. So how did you feel? You resisted. Can you tell us why?
Well, I would have done a lot. I mean, I wanted to take the word discovery and take it not just, I mean, most of it out of the context of a land discovery. And it was, or I know we're thinking in terms of Columbus and all that, but I wanted to take, you know, I wish I knew how to chop up the word and play with it and to do all sorts of, just expound on what all it can mean, good, bad, all sorts of ways. And I felt really restricted. I felt like I wasn't, flowing, you know, it wasn't coming to do that.
Anybody else?
Discovery is a children's storybook concept. Christopher Columbus discovered the New World, and we can argue about it forever. And resistance is a very real reaction to something negative around you. Interacting with the world, so it is a positive concept. Positive interaction.
There's a kind of strangeness. You said, how did I feel?
Yes,
a strangeness to it. And I just kind of felt uneasy and wasn't sure what all this was leading to. I had an idea, but I got cut off because I was asked to be part of the group. One thing. And I was thinking along the doing something different with the discovery thing. I was going to have some people down in the huddle and just representing something different too, and not worry too much about it until you know, we could start to build on that. It was kind of strange.
Yeah, I felt that picture. I was hesitant, you know, and, but as we got going, I kind of warmed up to it, you know, and it seemed like I was just getting going with it. I guess if we did it for a long period of time, it'd get easier to do, because it's something definitely new, and it's very interesting activity. I like it, but it's kind of scary.
And I think it was a really active process, because most of mine always tends to be passive, where you sit in one person's teaching, whereas this, everyone could come in and give ideas, and everyone was involved with it, and that's, I think, a lot. I mean, it is more uncomfortable, because it's not something we're used to, but it's a good way of creating bonds with people and then taking an active part in what you're learning and sharing, instead of just assuming that one person has the knowledge and will impart it to everybody else.
And it was visual too. If you wanted to modify it, it wasn't out of a blackboard or just thinking about it, you know, you moved somebody's hand or you moved it back. And it was easier, or maybe clear or maybe not as clear, to change ideas.
Any other feelings?
I felt like when you first start talking about it, I thought it'd be something sort of unifying. But I just found that everybody had a different, it's almost like we didn't build on each other's sculptures, we totally took them apart and came from our own point. Like when I started mine out, although I did the Columbus sort of stance, I was thinking of a nebulous looking for something sort of out there. And then it was interesting that it didn't feel unified at all. It felt really disconnected. Like it was just everyone going and just totally changing into something completely.
Is that the goal? Because in the other session when we did this, it was much more just making small modifications on the theme. It wasn't just completely disassembled and put back together. Is that, or do you have a goal?
Is
it discovery
the goal?
What's the goal?
Well, I was going, actually, nobody else was in the other session but Karen, right? I was going to ask her to tell you the difference between the other group and this group, because they're not the same.
Were we supposed to build on each other's and sort of carry them on?
What I told you to do was to build, put an initial idea there, and then build on the ideas. That's what I told you, if you remember.
But you gave us the theme, right?
I gave you the theme.
And then the idea is different than the theme.
That what you're saying, the initial no, there was,
the
I mean, what you hear in this word, the important thing that's happened here is that not everybody hears it the same. We're not all the same, we're all different. That's what I was talking about before. We have to learn from one another, and then we can build on the ideas of one another, or we can reject and do something completely different. And so you saw different processes happening here in this group. And it wasn't the same. And that's one of the points that I want to make. That in any group where we do this, we're not going to have the same response. Unless you're all the same people. But, you know, that's not what it's about. So this group, the only person who was in the previous group was Karen. No. And these sculptures are entirely different than the sculptures we did last week, aren't they? Mm-hmm.
In what ways?
We got A minuses and they got C's.
Oh, you mean just all in general they were different?
No, the ideas, the same words.
Okay. So
the same words.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's part of what I wanted to get across, is that each group is going to react differently. So I can't come in and tell you what to do. Well, I could, but you know, that's not what it's all about. The idea is that each group develops its ideas and discovers, you know, from what the group is doing, building its sculpture. Now, I only have about 2 minutes. So I want you to think about this. I'm sure that some of you will. This is something that you can actually use. We use it to find out what people know about a theme. We use it to evaluate learning. what people have learned, how they can describe what they've learned through sculpture, to share information, to identify gaps in knowledge and understanding, to help empower people. No? I mean, you felt funny about doing this because this isn't what you're used to in a classroom. You've come to a class, you've come to a classroom and you expected something different. But you were able to, if you wanted to, become involved in that sculpture. Everybody had an opportunity to participate, didn't they? Some did, some didn't. Some were just raw material and others were creators, sculptors. Well, but people are empowered by this process. And then it can also be used to put together a common analysis of a theme, not necessarily that everybody agrees. And that's the other important thing that came out. And that's why I didn't try to stop that. You said, well, what should people do? You know, you were asking me. I had to let that go. I mean, I would like to see it build and become a common creation. But people have different places that they're coming from. And so, sometimes there are different analyses that come out. And that's part of it. That's part of the learning process. So, are there any questions that you'd like to ask? Some of you are more interested in this. This is just one of the techniques that we make use of in what we call popular education. We have many more techniques. Yes?
I was just thinking about how similar this is to when I was in school doing mind mapping and such on paper. Starting with a simple thing and other people just kind of drawing off and these chairs and go sit, you know. Mm-hmm. And just kind of creating this organic thought process on paper. But it's nice to be introduced to take a more physical form.
One of the references that you might find useful, those of you who are doing training for transformation, is a series of workbooks called Training for Transformation that were developed in Africa. Are you familiar with them? Yeah, they're great. They were developed in Africa. They're available from the Center for Concern in Washington, D.C. And they're quite useful for application here in the United States, even if they come out of the African experience. It's Pablo Freire in English. There are lots of materials in Spanish. Also, in Canada, there are different organizations that have made use of popular education in Canada around social concerns. They've done a lot around Central America and helping people come to understand Central America. And some of them were people who worked in Central America and then went back to Canada and continued working with Oxfam Canada or with CUSO, which is an overseas volunteer organization, and have done, well, what some people in missionary circles call reverse mission, but people going back and trying to apply in methodologies that they've learned in the third world and that are effective in the third world to help raise awareness of people in developed countries about what's happening. So, yeah.
Brian, can you put those sheets in the Resource Center, please?
These?
Keep them here, yeah.
Sure, be glad to.
Thank you.
Okay. And I've told the Resource Center about some of these materials and I'm going to try to get them to hold them. And I don't actually have any more information on Training for... I thought Training for Transformation would be here, actually, in Holden, but it's not. But if anybody is interested, it is the Center for Concern in Washington, D.C. It's in the phone book, so I guess you could call. But try these kinds of things. Open yourself up to new kinds of ways to learn, to teach, and you'll find that it's lots of fun. Thank you very much.